Stories have been told for centuries now about the Beeswax shipwreck on the northern Oregon coast. Beeswax was not the name of the ship, but certainly a key component of its cargo. Lumps of beeswax still show up on the coast from time to time. It's taken a long time to put together information about the wreck, which probably happened before 1700. Every month, our Underground History segment brings in Chelsea Rose and Mark Tveskov from the Southern Oregon University of Anthropology, hereinafter referred to as SULA, to guide us into news of people working on archaeology projects. And this is a big one. How long have you guys known about the beeswax shipwreck?
Well, it's been a long time. I started doing archaeology in the early 90s, and there was an undergraduate student at the University of Oregon who was very excited about this and finding wooden artifacts on the beach that may or may not have been part of the wreck. And that was the first I heard about it. And it seems wherever you go in archaeology in Oregon, someone's got a story about this beeswax ship.
All right, so that brings in Scott Williams, who's the principal investigator. He's an archaeologist with the Washington Department of Transportation. Hi, Scott.
Hi.
So how did you end up being the principal investigator on this?
Well, archaeology is a fairly small field. So some friends of mine who I used to work with in Hawaii, some archaeologists, they were interested in a potential Spanish shipwreck in Hawaii prehistorically, and as they were researching that, they heard about the beeswax wreck and realized there was enough information there that if they could narrow down which wreck that was in Oregon, they could rule that shipwreck out as being in Hawaii. So they needed an archaeologist to handle the excavation permits and the research design, who had some experience in Oregon. So they called me up and said, how'd you like to work on a Spanish galleon wreck? And I thought, great, you know, in Mexico or the Caribbean. And they said, no, in Oregon. And I said, there's no galleons in Oregon. And they said, yeah, there is. There's one. And that's how I got involved back in 2006.
So where is the wreck site then, Scott?
It's somewhere off the North Oregon coast near off Nehalem Beach, the Nehalem River, and so near the town of Manzanita, which is north of Tillamook, south of Cannon Beach.
And if it's somewhere there, sort of roughly, I mean, it sounds like the hull went down certainly offshore. Did large parts of it wash onshore, do we think?
Yes. Yeah, there's great historical accounts from the 19th century. When the first fur traders arrived in Astoria, the Indians started bringing them blocks of beeswax to trade along with the fur pelts. And so the fur traders, you know, they could see these were obviously manufactured blocks of wax. And they had numbers carved into them and English letters. So they said, where are you finding this stuff? And the Indian said, oh, many years ago, this big ship wrecked on the beach, and it's been washing up ever since. So in 1813, we have the first written record of this shipwreck. And they talk about there's wreckage scattered on the beach. And then throughout the rest of the 19th century, as people started settling the Oregon coast, there's more records of pieces of the shipwreck at the river mouth, pieces on the beach, people finding stuff all over Nehalem Beach.
So what, you know, it was a Spanish galleon. It sounds like by process of elimination, you figured out over time approximately when it went ashore or when it wrecked. And do you know anything about the name of the ship or what else it was carrying besides beeswax?
Yeah, we think we do. So we haven't actually found the wreck yet. So that's what we need to be 100% certain. But the Spanish kept incredibly good records of their voyages. Galleons only left the Philippines once a year. And so for taxes and insurance, the Spanish kept very detailed records. So when one of these galleons went missing, of course it was a huge economic problem for the colony in the Philippines because everyone was depending on their livelihood for this cargo. And so they would go searching for these wrecks. And so we have a great record of which ones disappeared and were never found. And there's only one, there's two right around the time period we know this wreck dates to, based on, besides the beeswax, things like Chinese porcelain have been washing ashore, and bits of wood that we know are from the wreck and can be radiocarbon dated. So there's only two ships, two of these Spanish galleons that are missing around 1700. We're pretty certain that the one that wrecked in Oregon was a ship called the Santo Cristo de Burgos. She left the Philippines in 1693 on July 1st and was never seen again. And we think it's that one. The other missing ship dates to 1705. So between 1693 and 1705, giant earthquake on the Oregon coast created a large tsunami. And the way the artifacts and the wreckage have been found and described, it seems like it was from a ship that wrecked before the tsunami, and then the tsunami took a near-shore wreck, you know, something that had maybe sunk in 20 or 40 feet of water, and spread it out on the beach at Nehalem.
So let me ask our in-house folks, Chelsea and Mark, I mean, how often do you run into situations like this where there was a natural calamity that intervened between the time of the event that you're trying to uncover and today that kind of scrambles your eggs a bit as you go about the dig?
I think most of our calamities are human-made. Like someone cuts a road and then archaeology falls out of the cut bank of the road more often than that. And this is nature's hand providing an assist to the discovery of the ship.
Right. And we're terrestrial archaeologists, and that really is what is called. But we work on the land, and we've kind of flirted with some coastline sites. But, you know, we don't usually get too far out in the waves and the water, so it's kind of cool to hear about this stuff. But we do see on the coast, we've seen big sand deposits from tsunamis, which kind of cap archaeological sites, and then they have another site on top. And you can see these natural disasters in the archaeological record, which a lot of times confirms a lot of the oral histories from the native tribes that live along the coast that know that, you know, these big events happened.
When you talk about capping of sites, I mean, so sometimes you get, you know, basically one sort of dwelling on top of another one that doesn't know the other one existed?
Yeah, if you had people living somewhere and a tsunami came, or a freshet, which is like a flood coming down the
yes.
from the rivers, and it could put, like, you know, sometimes 5 feet of soil or sand on top of an archaeological site, and then somebody comes in later because a good place to settle is still a good place to settle, but it just might be.
And in one instance of a site we worked on the Coquille River estuary, there were Native American fish traps that were built in the salt water that with the tectonic uplift that precedes those tsunamis made that land dry, and then people were living on top of that. So we're excavating an indigenous terrestrial community, and under it is a fish trap that was once in salt water. So that kind of layering happens frequently.
Wow, so it was a coastal kind of village, and then it became mm-hmm. not a coastal village because it's just too far from the water.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. We were talking, this is Underground History on the Jefferson Exchange with Mark Tveskov and Chelsea Rose from the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology. Scott Williams is an archaeologist with Washington DOT and the principal investigator of the Beeswax shipwreck on the Northern Oregon coast. You can join the conversation at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. So, Scott, you have an approximate area. You have a possible couple of names for the ships. What else? What else has been done in recent years? What else can be done?
Well, at this point, we're trying to start looking offshore to see if we can actually find the shipwreck. And so what we are, shipwrecks in Oregon are protected by state law. They're considered archaeological sites. So you can't salvage them for treasure. You can't go dig them up and collect things from them without an archaeological excavation permit from the State Historic Preservation Office. So our work is all done through a nonprofit organization called the Maritime Archaeological Society. And so our next steps is, because we're a nonprofit, we're fairly small, we don't have a lot of money. We were just recently awarded a grant by the Oregon State Historic Preservation Office they gave us some money to charter a boat so that we can go out. We think the ship probably ran aground or hit some rocks offshore. And the main part of the hull, if we're lucky, is still offshore and hasn't been too scattered by storm waves and the tsunami. And so our plan now is to take that grant money, get a magnetometer, which is a special kind of metal detector we can tow underwater, and see if we can actually find some evidence for the ship, maybe either by locating cannons or large anchors that would then lead us to other deposits. Once we find it, we will report it to the State Historic Preservation Office, and then we're probably done. Underwater archaeology is expensive. It takes a lot of technical gear. So underwater archaeology on the Oregon coast is really difficult because of weather, tides, swells, that kind of thing. So that's one of the reasons we've been at this now for 10 years, is we're totally reliant. We have fairly small boats. So we're really reliant on good weather,
mm-hmm.
and we're all volunteers. Every one of us has our, you know, full time job doing something else, and so there's been a few days where, you know, we have great weather but no volunteers. In other days, we have all the volunteers, but no weather. So that's kind of our next step. For us, it's really just a matter as archaeologists and historians, and we have a lot of community members involved on the North Oregon coast. We're really just trying to kind of see if we can solve this mystery of what is the beeswax wreck. And one of the reasons people were so interested in it, especially in the 19th century, was because it had so much beeswax on it, people thought, well, this is crazy. You know, this can't be a shipwreck. There's just too much wax. No boat was that big. You know, it must be natural wax from an oil deposit or something like that. So we're just kind of continuing that. We'd really like to know which ship it is. If we're correct, and if it is a Spanish galleon, which we're about 99% certain we're correct, it was way off course. It shouldn't have been anywhere near Northern Oregon. So that's kind of an interesting thing, is why was it so far off course? We may never know that. If it's the wreck we think it is, this would have been the first European shipwreck, as far as we know, on the Pacific Northwest coast in 1693. And there were survivors of the shipwreck, according to the Indian histories.
Really? And what happened to them?
They lived with the coastal Indians for a time. Some of them may have set off overland down to Mexico, and some of them were killed. They, after living with the Indians for a while, they eventually created too much friction between them and the local tribe and were finally killed.
Wow. We have a call here from Victoria in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on our Underground History segment with Scott Williams, Chelsea Rose, and Mark Feskov.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, Jeffrey. This is Victoria Law, and I wanted to say to Chelsea and Mark, I am so thrilled that they're doing this. I used to live in Manzanita, and I knew the story about the beeswax ship. And the thing that surprised me when they're talking about beeswax, I think they have found over like 20 tons of beeswax. It's not like a block of beeswax.
Yeah, so Scott was saying.
And I wanted to verify that those galleons, they did carry sometimes 20 tons of beeswax.
That's a lot of beeswax. Let's find out. Victoria, thanks for that call. Appreciate it.
So
how much, Scott?
So the galleons would carry anywhere from 60 to 100 or 110 tons of beeswax every year. And we know that from the Spanish archives. We don't know exactly how much wax has been collected over the years out there at Nehalem, because the early settlers used to mine it. That was something they would do to supplement their income from farming and fishing and logging. They would go out and collect as much beeswax as they could and sell it in Portland and San Francisco.
What was it used for, and what was the origination point of the stuff that would have been on that ship?
So the origination point was Manila, mm-hmm. in the Philippines. And what the Spanish used it for is, remember, they had, you know, their huge empire going in Mexico and South America, mm-hmm. in the New World. There weren't a lot of native honeybees. In fact, in North America, there weren't any native honeybees that produced wax in large quantities. But in the Philippines, you have the giant Asian honeybee, and it makes giant wax combs. So the Spanish shipped the beeswax over to Mexico every year for churches and for candles for people's houses. So it was a strictly utilitarian item.
Okay, so basically like having a shipment of light bulbs, in a sense. Chelsea?
Exactly.
And one of the other artifacts you guys have found that's been associated with the ship are the napped ceramic points, right? The arrowheads.
Yeah. So the galleons, what the Spanish trade was really a trade in luxury items from Asia to the New World. So things like Chinese porcelain, silk, a lot of Chinese and Indian silk and cotton, and art objects from Japan, like wooden lacquerware and spices. So the beeswax was kind of a last-minute add-on to the ship, just a strictly utilitarian object. Over the years, people have found, washing ashore, bits of that Chinese porcelain. We've heard stories of local fishermen actually pulling up in their nets intact Chinese vases. We've never seen one of those, but people tell us that, you know, back in the 70s, folks used to pull these up off the bottom. There have been a few wooden artifacts that have washed up over the years, a couple of ship's rigging pulley blocks. And the Tillamook County Pioneer Museum has a little silver oil jar. So it would have been an oil jar used by a Jesuit priest for a last rites ceremony.
For anointing, yeah.
Yeah, an anointing oil jar. And that was taken off the wreck in the water during an extremely low tide in the, I think, 1898.
Oh, so that gives you some clues about location. And I don't want to ask about the difficulty of this, though, because, I mean, wood obviously decays over time, particularly in an environment like salt water. So you're looking for a fairly subtle kind of formation, I would think, to be able to even tell that there was a hull there or parts of one.
Yeah. If the ship went down relatively in one piece, there ought to be a ballast pile, which would be all the stone ballast they put in the bottom of the ship to help keep it upright. A lot of the wood is going to be rotted away, you know, eaten by ship's worms or just decomposed in the ocean. There could be intact wood under that ballast pile. Sand makes a great blanket to preserve wood, which is why we get so many shipwrecks on the Oregon coast.
Oh, insulation.
So every few years, when there's a big storm, a shipwreck pops out.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as it's buried in sand, a lot of the wood can be preserved. And so what we'll be looking for with the magnetometer, which only picks up iron, is evidence for either, like I said, cannons, anchors, large ship's bolts, where the ship was bolted together. And then that might lead us to a ballast pile.
Okay, so best of luck on that. And do you have an approximate date for when you might have all the volunteers and the right kind of weather to meet up together?
We've got all the volunteers. We are waiting. Our magnetometer died. Maritime Archaeological Society owns a magnetometer. Ours died, so we're waiting to borrow one, but we're ready to go as soon as the weather's good.
All right, best of luck with that. That's the Beeswax Shipwreck. Scott Williams is the principal investigator. He's an archaeologist with the Washington DOT, brought to our attention by the folks from Underground History, the folks at the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology, Chelsea Rose and Mark Tveskov. Always good to see you guys in the studio. And Scott, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thanks a bunch.
Good luck, Scott.